Welcome to episode 48 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm Greg Johnson, and today is Saturday, October 24th, 2020. The topic for this episode is selective sharing of ideas, inventions, product insights, and information. And I know that's a big mouthful for a title, but the idea is, in a nutshell, and as I like to begin these episodes, I'll provide sometimes a story, but usually an outline, something that conveys the general message of the episode, so you can listen to, you know, sort of 3 to 5 minutes and catch the basic information. And then after that introduction, I go into more detail for those that want to stay on and listen to a little more. So there is a song by the popular 1970s music group called the Eagles. And in that song, it talks about paradise. And the line from the song is, "Call someplace paradise, kiss it goodbye." And this band, the Eagles, was quite popular there out of California. They're eventually, I don't know if the town was named as a result of that song, or if that song maybe had some relationship to the town called Paradise, but there is a town in California, indeed, called Paradise, that unfortunately was the victim of some fires recently. But the song basically was talking about how when a place gets a reputation as being an amazing vacation destination, there is, you can imagine, sort of a curve on a chart that goes up. So that curve and that chart, that line going up over time, represents the value that you get going to a place. Because there are more shops, there are more stores, there are more people to interact with, more restaurants. It's getting better and better. And then at some point, that curve kind of reaches a plateau. And then it starts going down because there's too many cars, there's too much noise, too much pollution, too much crime, too much development, too many con artists, you know. So that's the idea. And I was recently watching a YouTube video where these YouTubers who used to provide travel blogs, vlogs, you know, videos, they started noticing that the places they were suggesting as travel destinations were just getting really overrun. And even, you know, some of their fans would show up, and it wasn't always just their fans showing up to see them. It was sometimes just people camping in the area, but they were kind of like promoting these places. And then there'd be garbage and people walking off the trails, and the natural habitat was getting harmed. And some of that's just, you know, the result of having excess population anywhere, is just there's too many people for the environment to sustain. You know, we have this sense that technology is going to solve every problem of overpopulation, and it does solve a lot of them as far as like food production, for example. But there's some things that we can't, you know, flip a switch and suddenly there's more of, like clean drinking water or clean air. And natural habitats that, you know, parks that have millions of visitors a year, those parks are going to start to get worn down. And you can't make beautiful natural habitats out of Legos or, you know, petroleum products or whatever. Like, it's nature. So it has to be preserved. And when there's too many people trying to enjoy it, it becomes less enjoyable. Okay, so anyway, but that's the premise of this episode, is that sometimes when you share something, the outcome of what you're sharing can be counterproductive, can actually be negative. I noticed I was promoting and sharing information about some products recently, in recent years, and I went one day to the grocery store, and they were sold out. There's a trick, kind of, that I would use, and I'm not being deceitful with it. It was just that I would find products that were really good and I really liked them and I'd like to promote them. So what I would do is buy the normal quantity that I would kind of stock up. I would try to never buy out a product entirely, because when you do that, then you're the only one that knows about it. You always want to leave a few products on the shelf, even if you really like something and you want to buy all of it, you want to leave a few products because that primes the pump even more. You've got a few more people that see that product that's almost sold out. They assume, rightly so, hey, there's probably a good product. It's almost sold out. I'm going to get one. And of course, most of the time, they're going to like the product because it's a good product. So I have seen on numerous occasions where grocery stores will dedicate more shelf space to a product where I've done this. And you can't fake the system. I mean, if there's a bad product or something that's cost too much, or the company behind it is not good, or they're using unethical practices or whatever, this doesn't work in those cases. But it does work for good products. So anyway, and also when you buy out the product, except for the few that are on the shelf, the inventory system for the store automatically reorders. And the people who are stocking the shelves are going to notice that. They're going to say, hey, that product's moving quickly. And if it's a smaller store where maybe a manager has some eyes on what products are moving, you know, the manager is going to notice that. And so they might give it more shelf space. And when it has more shelf space, it has more visibility. And when it has more visibility, more people buy it. And at that moment, you know, if it's a good product and people go back to buy more, the system works. But sometimes you never know if something goes viral. You know, if somebody's trying something and they're telling a friend and the friend's telling a friend, and pretty soon the company can't keep up with the demand. And I don't know how much impact that I personally have. I always assume there are other people in parallel doing something similar as I am. But anyway, quite often I'll notice that products get sold out and then they're hard to find again. You know, when a person is sharing about a product, that can have a positive impact, but it can also result in maybe some product you really like not being available. And similarly, when you bring attention to something, it can have unpredictable outcomes. So I was doing a review of some new shoes, a new shoe technology, and these were shoes that would cause the person wearing the shoes to feel sort of imbalanced. The bottom of the shoe was curved. They're for exercise. And in fact, that was the selling point. So every shoe manufacturer started coming out with these shoes. Skechers were one of the first. And they still have a model, but it's hard to get. So I was doing this shoe review, and I said, you know, these are the best shoes I've ever worn. These are amazing shoes. This is like the first big development in shoes in the history of shoes. But I said, you know, there are going to be people who, despite the advertising, they're going to wear these shoes, then they're going to trip and injure themselves, and they're going to sue the shoe company. And they're going to say, well, this shoe was wobbly. Well, they're called wobbly shoes, you know, like that was the whole reason people buy them, is because they're wobbly. But I just knew, you know, there are going to be enough people out there that adults that don't know how to walk properly when they're wearing wobbly shoes, and they're going to be falling all over the place, and that this was not going to last long. So, sure enough, yeah, there were lawsuits. The shoe companies that were manufacturing these, all of them got scared, decided not to do it anymore. And Skechers still has a version that they have available on their website. I don't think it's available in stores anymore. But there's an example where, you know, it's not a supply and demand problem, but just highlighting a potential flaw in a product where, you know, the hope is that if it becomes common knowledge, that the shoes are wobbly and that people need to be careful, then that should protect against any lawsuits because everyone knows they're wobbly. So that was my thinking to kind of highlight that. And I do not think that I brought about the downfall of that shoe, but I think that, you know, myself and others who were kind of recognizing the sort of lawsuit frenzy that this country has right now here in the United States, you know, everybody's getting sued for something. McDonald's gets sued because the coffee's too hot or whatever. And then you see all these disclaimers on everything because, you know, behind every disclaimer, there's probably some current, past, or pending future threat of a lawsuit. So, you know, the coffee now says this coffee's hot. It's hot because you asked for a hot coffee. But anyway, I was using a technique recently to get access to some data on a computer, and it was a situation where that data would not have been accessible from a variety of platforms with a variety of hardware solutions and software data recovery solutions. That data was pretty well locked out. And this method I used allowed me to recover tens of thousands of files, hundreds and hundreds of megabytes, gigabytes actually, of data for the customer that I was working with. And the person was really pleased with the outcome. So I didn't go into great detail with them about how I was able to help them out. And while I usually print articles or post articles on the website about some of the different tech solutions that I create, that is one that I'm not going to be sharing because, you know, in the wrong hands, if somebody were to try to get to some data that they're not supposed to be getting to, they could use this method. And it was a combination of software and hardware and other things that allowed that to work. In the world of tech support, there are people referred to as white hat and black hat people. And the black hat folks are the ones who, you know, hack into computers and try to steal credit card numbers and steal people's money, etc., and perform, you know, identity theft activities. That's black hat. And the white hat people sometimes do similar things using similar methods, like they'll hack into a system, but they don't steal anything. Their intention is to be able to get into systems and to demonstrate flaws in systems. And sometimes companies will pay white hat actors to break into a system and identify flaws. It's both in the computer world and also, I think, considered to be in the physical security world as well that this takes place. So some of these advanced techniques could be used by either folks trying to achieve good or folks trying to achieve bad, but I tend to not want to share some of the methods I use because I feel like they could be harmful potentially. So up to this point, we've talked about a few things. One is, you know, finding a great vacation spot, telling people about it, and now it's no longer a great vacation spot, or some wonderful food item, and then it's sold out, or a product that is really great, but has some potential flaws or liabilities. And this fourth category is, you know, security and tech solutions that could be used for nefarious purposes. And the background that I come from, being in sort of an academic environment, it influences me to want to share information. I really like the idea of open source technologies and, you know, open access to things and public domain and all of that. I really like the idea. And so my inclination is to always want to share things. But in recent years, as I've seen some of the negative outcomes of being open about sharing things, I've tried to be more reserved now. So that is the topic of this episode, is basically the idea of being reserved and selective about ideas, product insights, and information that, you know, could be a problem potentially. And there is an aspect of, you know, in business, most people are a little bit restrained with regard to what they share that could be considered their own intellectual property or systems that they've developed at a cost of lots of money and lots of time. And what happens then is, if you spend, let's say, 3 years and $3 million developing some system, and then you start using it, and it's a great system, and you're making good money, and slowly you'll make your $3 million back. Let's say you're making $1 million a year. There's $1 million a year market for this process. And then you decide, well, I'm going to be a nice person. I'll start sharing this process that I use. And then there are 9 other people, so a total of 10, 9 other people who say, wow, that's a pretty neat idea. I'll go ahead and do that. And so now they are also entering this market. And instead of having, you know, $1 million a year to pay back the expenses you had to develop this, you're going to have a tenth of that. So you'll have $100,000 a year, because the market, let's just assume, is split evenly among these 10 people. So there's another example where sharing something can sort of backfire and cause a negative financial impact. Now, I'm making the math simple here by saying, you know, 3 years, $1 million a year, development costs. In the winter, and we're heading into winter now, we're kind of into the middle of the fall or late fall, most of the leaves have dropped, and so there's less on the trees to dissipate noise and to reduce the background noise. So that helicopter flying over was really loud, even from a distance, but now it's kind of further in the background. So anyway, I made the math easy by saying, you know, there'd be this 3-year development period in which you spend $1 million a year, and then you know, you're $3 million, either, you know, out of pocket cost or a loan from the bank or whatever, and now you're going to try to, you know, pay that back. So if you had the entire market yourself, sort of a monopoly on that, and then you had everything patented and trademarked and copyrighted and all that, then you could have a good sum of money coming back and pay off that loan, let's say, as an example, in 3 years. But if somehow a person steals your intellectual property or starts using something you've developed, then they take a big share of the market. And it could take you many years to pay back that money. And the business model that was appearing to be profitable, considering your overhead costs and the machinery you'd have to keep up and running and all of that, suddenly it's not even a profitable business because the market's opened up to all these other providers. And maybe they didn't even take your invention. Maybe they're taking a new approach, might even be better than your approach. But, you know, the idea of sharing intellectual property is nice, but it may need to be done in a reserved way. Tesla was known for, the company Tesla was known for sharing some of their intellectual property, some of their technologies with other companies. But it was the technology where they were at, let's say, you know, 5 years ago or something. So their current technology is not being shared. with my own business, I try to operate it in a way that is not dependent upon and reliant upon secrecy of intellectual property and trademarks and copyrighted material, etc. I try to have a business that can pretty much disclose everything about the techniques and the methods and the training and the tools and software, all of that, and still be profitable and still have a busy, robust customer base, even to the point of training other people to get into the same line of business and still being able to keep busy. Because really, all of that's going to happen anyway, whether you want it to or not. So you might as well just participate in the process and figure that, you know, there is going to be competition anyway. There are going to be people learning technology approaches to solutions, and why not just be part of that and be dynamic enough to deal with it? Throughout history, there have been these fraternities and secret societies and lodges and organizations where people share connections and they share knowledge in an enclosed and controlled way. And that is a mindset and a belief that some people have, is that, you know, these things can be shared, but they should only be shared within a fraternal order of whatever it might be, to maintain and control the power and direct the flow of power and knowledge and access, etc. So I would not consider going that far, but I have thought about having perhaps a membership-based website where there could be special content there that would provide some of these tech tools and product insights and ideas and inventions and that kind of thing, so that at least it would be controlled in some way. But I think even that's too, you know, complicated. And even as I say, I try to build a business model that doesn't rely on secretive practices or patents and trademarks and copyrights and all of that. I think it's possible to expand that to encourage others to do the same and to more and more build a society that doesn't rely on those things, so that in that way, it's creating a context and an ecosystem that can support and sustain open access, public domain, and equal access to information and valuable market services. With most of my podcast episodes, I like to have some sort of moral of the story or a conclusion where I can say, and therefore, you know, you should or could do this or that. But in this case, I don't really have any solution other than to say that I think we can try to move our society more toward a system where people can be more open with ideas and inventions and solutions. Well, thanks for taking time to listen to another episode of the Walk and Talk podcast. So until next time, I hope you stay well, and I look forward to sharing more with you again soon. Take care.